and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives and give us a glimpse into their creative process. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and before we get into our interview with members of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, I want to ask you, yes, you, for your story of a life-changing song. Like, do you have a song or a record that transformed the way you saw the world? Well, if you do, tweet at us. We're at ThisSongKUTX, or you can send us an email. It's thissong@kutx.org, or leave a comment on our Facebook page, or even call us. Go old school. Our number's 512-766-9066. We would love to put your story on this podcast. Okay, now, on to St. Paul and the Broken Bones. They are a six-piece band based out of Birmingham, Alabama, and they've gained a reputation for their electric live shows. Like, lead singer Paul Janeway has this powerful voice and totally commanding stage presence, and he, backed up by the rest of the band, like, they regularly whip crowds into a delightful frenzy. Their latest record, Sea of Noise, came out last year. It's filled with songs that quote 20th century soul and funk. And seriously, you feel those songs inside, like emotionally. The band came to Austin, Texas for the Austin City Limits Music Festival. And while they were here, I got to sit down and talk with Paul Janeway, guitarist Rowan Lawler, and bass player Jesse Phillips backstage in the KUTX tent. KUTX is the radio station where we make this podcast. And all three guys, like in some way, they talked about songs that helped them understand the connection between emotion and music. So here they are, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Always my go-to is I've Been Loving You Too Long by Otis Redding.
I've been loving you.
That one, I think that one changed my life for a long time. You know, it put me on a different path in life, I feel like.
I've been loving you a little too long. I don't want to stop.
It's just that build and build, and then it's like the desperation and emotion. I'd say that'd be the one.
Don't make me stop.
I remember being just really, really moved by it, you know, even as a kid, I was like, because it was really the only thing I could really listen to besides religious music. So I was...
So your parents were like, religious music or Otis Redding?
Or a little bit of soul. I mean, another song that a change is going to come, that song, it's just like, that's just a great, I know that's like a well-known one, but that one has had a really profound impact.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
I mean, and that has a different, I mean, it's, I've Been Loving You So Long is a...
It's a love song.
It's a love song.
Love
and
song.
A Change Is Gonna Come is like it's the most pleading.
It's a social
change song.
Yeah.
And you guys do that, right? Like, you do A Change Is Gonna Come, or you have...
We have in the past. We actually, bizarrely enough, we just did a Otis Redding's 75th birthday party. His wife Zelma asked us to come play this event, and we did. Because Otis covered "A Change Is Gonna Come," we did that song, and it's an impactful song, man. It's just got that. It's well written, and it has an incredible message, you know.
It's been too hard living, oh man.
I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the clouds. It's been a long time coming. I know change has gotta come. Oh yes it is.
So do you think maybe it's like, apart from the songs, do you think it's Otis Redding's voice that kind of changed? Yeah, I mean, because you keep on going back to, like,
absolutely.
Otis
Redding. No, and it's the voice. Because it was he didn't show like this crazy range, but it was what he did. It was so emotional. You felt it, and you don't necessarily. I don't know if you feel that all the time. You know, I feel like great singers you do, but I think he was just really good at. I think he was probably one of the best at doing that.
Do you think that being raised, like, because you were kind of raised to be a preacher, right?
Right, right.
And one of the things that preachers do is that they are able to, like, convey emotion and, like, carry people on a wave of emotion sometimes. I mean, do you think that you saw some of that in Otis Redding?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all from the same, it all comes to me from the same place. And that emotional, being able to draw emotions out of yourself and people is a very powerful thing. It's what we do for a living, you know, and we love doing it. So it's a powerful thing.
And I think the difference sometimes, I mean, with Otis Redding is, like, you can, doing it live is sometimes it's an easier thing to do because you've got, like, people in front of you and you're communicating with them in the moment. But with singers who can do it on a record, like, you sang this song 60 years ago and I hear it today and it makes me feel like...
It's transcendent.
Transcendent, yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the magic of Otis Redding.
Yeah, I think that's the goal, is to make transcendent music. I mean, for us, and I mean, we follow that blueprint.
It's been so long, a little too long, but the change has gotta come.
Do you think, like, Otis Redding opened your eyes to what you could do in secular music?
Yes, in the sense that you apply those principles that you learn in church with singing with that sense of urgency to music that you write yourself that's not necessarily for a higher cause, you know? I think yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, to a degree.
Yeah. I don't know, and I kind of think it all is to a higher cause, right? Like, if you're doing it right.
Personally,
it's all,
yes.
So, like,
I mean, that's how we kind of feel like, you know, bringing them to the Church of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, you know. There's probably going to be a little more cussing and sexual references and so on and so forth, but it's still for a higher cause.
So you're here to bring people to church? Like,
if we can.
Right on.
If we can.
I've been trying to think about a song that really changed me early on, and I was raised in the church too, just like Paul was. Uh-huh.
Were you raised in the same church?
Not in, like, the same church.
Okay.
But I was raised Baptist, Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm. my father was a preacher, so a lot of the same song. I was listening to a lot of the same songs probably. But early on, you know, honestly, my dad was in a a cappella group, and I remember Amazing Grace really affecting me in a major way, even before I realized the weight of it, you know.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Even as a kid, it made me tear up, and I hated it because I hated showing any emotion when I was a kid. Like, I don't know why, it was embarrassing.
I don't know, boys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really embarrassing to me. And so I knew they were going into it because there was this whole like chorale thing at the beginning of it. And I hated it because I was like, I'm going to cry in front of everybody in my church. I mean, that was really the first time that I could feel something speaking to me through music.
Yeah.
And it changed the way it didn't change it because I didn't have a way of thinking of it before that, but it definitely changed the way I looked at it or felt it for the rest of my life.
When did you start playing music? Like, how old?
I was young. I mean, I was like 4 or 5 when I was, but music was always around. We had instruments sitting around. My uncles and my father played, and music was a big, important part of life for my family, for my father's side of the family. And so if you didn't know how to play or sing, or, you know, you were just the black sheep.
Oh, wow. That's like the opposite of my family. I was the only person who could do any kind of musical stuff. Like,
now, I was
like
lucky.
A unicorn.
Yeah, I was super lucky to be raised in that atmosphere.
That's cool. I mean, so you kind of understood pretty early on what music could do. Like,
I guess so. But
maybe.
But I didn't.
But you didn't like it. It was like, I know it could make me cry, but I'm like, not.
Well, it made me feel vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the important lesson maybe that I learned from it. Early on, and after a while, I just started wanting to do that to other people, just like these guys, just like anybody, I guess, that's a musician. You want to be able to speak to someone without saying words. Or in my case, I play guitar. I mean, that was sort of where, that was my gateway drug into wanting to be a lifelong musician.
Yeah, and now do you have songs that you put on to make you cry, but like you like it?
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, now I love it.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, I need it. You know, it's therapy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a thread running through what I hear you guys are doing. I wonder, Jesse, what you have to say here.
I don't know. I was thinking about it while these guys were sort of talking about it. I know a really important album for me, and I mean, you could pick any of the songs off the album, but when I was young and I first started getting into different kinds of music other than what my parents listened to, and you know, whatever we played in school band and all that, I heard Miles Davis's Kind of Blue for the first time. That really changed things for me because just what's important about that record is more like it's the delivery of the material because it's modal, it's slow developing, it's all about like sound and texture and vibe. There's no words to grab onto. It's just how it sounds and how evocative that is. And I mean, I'm still kind of that way. Like, words are secondary to me. So when I'm thinking about a song or like how to create a song, it's all the other stuff that I think about. But I mean that whole record, it's also a product of the strengths of the people that were in Miles Davis's band at the time. Like, they were the only people that could have made that record that sounded like that, and having anybody else cover those songs, you know, when you hear a group, because I guess a couple of them are recognized as standards now, like All Blues or Freddie Freeloader or whatever. But I mean, it's not evocative in the same way as those original album versions are, and it was, I think it was recorded in the 50s too. So just how good that record sounds is still crazy. I mean, it sounds like these like five guys, I think it's five of them in a room, just creating this like magical, slow moving, it's so like contextual and I don't know. So that I think for me, that was kind of rearranged the way I thought about how music worked. I think that was the first time I just heard music on record, like recorded sound, completely devoid of any kind of lyrical content, or even the melodies on that record, they're all modal, so they're not really like built into like scalar motifs in the way that a lot of like melodies are on record. Just like they'll play the same note for six beats and then play another note that's like half a step away, you know, and hold it out. And so I mean, I think it was mostly just emotional and instinctual for me.
I mean, how did it make you feel? Was part of it like you could feel the connection between the guys in the room, or like?
Yeah, and the sound of the room, and you can like hear their instruments clicking, like, you know, and you can hear like a guy crack a note, and you can, if somebody like turns to look at one of the other guys in the band, like you can sort of hear the, like the trumpet sound a little further away, you know. I mean, it's just, it sounds like a living, breathing musical organism. It doesn't sound mechanical or like manufactured at all, if that makes sense.
To hear in a recording, like, it sounds like what you heard was what all recordings are, but it's hard to think of them that way. Like, it's just a moment in time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you actually
exactly.
Hear a moment in time between people.
Well, I think a lot of the, like, knowing more about music and some about jazz and stuff, I mean, I think a lot of the classic jazz recordings are considered classic because of the performances on the record could have only happened during that time with those players, and it'll never happen like that again. And not to compare our last record to the classic jazz records of yore, but I think when we made this record, Sea of Noise, the one that we've just put out, I think we did kind of approach it in like, let's make a record that really only our band can make right now. Like, it's a combination of these specific like strengths and ideas and talents of these players. Like, I mean, it would be hard for somebody to cover a lot of those songs with just an acoustic guitar and like make a, you know, a reasonable representation of it. It's just a different approach, and like
so trying to get like a representation, like you were saying, just like a representation of like what you are and what you can do
right
at this point,
this particular juncture,
this particular yeah, juncture. Yeah,
you know, and our band had 500 shows under their belt, you know, going into making this record, as opposed to 10 when we made the first one or something. So I mean, it was more of an opportunity to really explore those strengths and just, you know, I think the new record sounds cool, and a lot of that's credit to the production and the engineering and and stuff, but I mean, that was it. I mean, it was like, let's use the room sounds, let's use whatever's at our disposal, you know, to make a vibier, more sonically evocative record.
Well, man, thank you guys so much for sitting down with me. I know you've got a lot of stuff to do, but appreciate you guys.
No, it's great talking to you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Is it the way that I move with you?
You Got Me Feeling Like, from St. Paul and the Broken Bones' latest record, Sea of Noise, a record that could only have been made by that band at that certain time. The band will be touring North America from now through the fall. They're going pretty much everywhere, and they are also doing some dates with Hall & Oates, which is a really good fit. And if you live in Austin, you can see St. Paul and the Broken Bones performing with Hall & Oates on September 22nd at the Cedar Park Center. I'll post a link to their tour dates on the show notes page for this episode at KUTX.org, and I'll also post the Spotify playlist for this episode. There you'll be able to find all the songs we referenced during this interview, all the way through. And if you liked this interview, you should totally become a This Song subscriber. Go to the podcast app or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast. Become a subscriber. That way you'll get next week's interview with Matthew Sweet delivered right to you. And you'll also find our archive. We have over 93 episodes talking to people like Mark Mothersbaugh and Tegan and Sarah about life-changing musical experiences. Lots of good listening for you. And that's it. You have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen. This interview was recorded by Jack Anderson. Taylor Wallace curates our Instagram account. Kelly Seal is our excellent intern. And thanks to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And it is true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @ThisSongKUTX. You can like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Austin Music Minute, Liner Notes, and Song of the Day on iTunes. And if you have a moment, we would love a rating or a review. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.